Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Diagnosis necessarily, you know, it just might mean that might be you're actually.
Thank you. Now, looking forward to having one of those at some point. Yeah.
This is WBUR, and we're interrupting Here and Now to bring you live coverage of
you
Governor
guys are
Charlie
at least
Baker's
kind
daily
to move
coronavirus
a
briefing at
some
the
of
State
you,
House.
Create a little bit of variety and an occasional surprise. Bruce moves. Jonathan moves. Sharman's kind of taking over the front row here. Mike's always... You're actually sitting in Mike Dean's seat. I just want to point that out. Although he seems to have given it up. You were absolutely, that's right. Yep. And that is Steve Brown's seat. Yeah, we're gonna get you a little plaque when this is all over. And so good afternoon. Today we're gonna provide an update on testing cases, hospitalizations, and PPE, as well as talk about our ongoing progress on unemployment assistance, including the new system we launched this week to help people who are not traditionally covered by unemployment insurance. First on testing, yesterday's report showed that there were over 14,000 tests processed in Massachusetts, which is a huge number, nearly double the previous high. The increase is in part because we are continuing to expand testing, and as we expand testing, it doesn't all come in the same every single day, and the numbers vary a little bit up and down. But the bottom line is if you're doing more of it, you'll expect to see over time higher peaks than you've seen previously with respect to the total number of testing. And we have been focusing for the most part in our testing on areas that we consider to be high-risk areas, high-incident areas like nursing homes, rest homes, assisted living facilities. Hospitals have done a lot of testing, and we've also done a lot of testing in communities that we believe have high incidence as well. And we're going to continue to set up more testing sites. We talked this week about a program we're ramping up with Quest Diagnostics and with a number of our community health centers here in Massachusetts to make sure we're doing and making available enough tests for those community health centers, especially in underserved communities. That high number of tests in a particular batch also translates into a big jump in new cases, which was over 3,000 new positives yesterday. The one thing we would point out is proportionally the number of positive tests compared to the number of total tests was actually lower than it had been for the previous few days. It came in at around 21%. Now, we've also said that you can't draw too many conclusions from one day or 2 days worth of data, but obviously there are two important elements to our testing data: how many people we test, how many come up positive, and what the ratio between those two numbers looks like. It's tended over the course of the past couple of weeks, if you look at our publicly reported data, to fluctuate a bit between sort of the high 20s and the low 20s. But again, we've been testing in places where we anticipate we are likely to find positive tests, and the reason we're testing there is to create clarity for us and for the communities in which we're engaged in that testing activity. This is all being done as well under the umbrella of the surge that we said would be happening around this time, and the data obviously on the hospital side is bearing that out. We continue to watch our hospitalization rate carefully every single day along with hospital capacity. And here I just want to come back to what we talked about yesterday, and hopefully people have seen the PSA that was put together by a number of Boston teaching hospitals. While, yes, we are in the surge, we spent a tremendous amount of time working with our colleagues in the healthcare and hospital community to make sure that we would have the capacity here in Massachusetts to not just be able to serve everybody who's dealing with COVID-19 here in the Commonwealth, but also to make sure that we would be able to continue to do all the things that our healthcare system does to serve people who are dealing with other kinds of maladies and illnesses and conditions. And I think Bay State Healthcare put this really well yesterday when they basically said, we have 150 COVID-19 patients that we're serving, but we have 400 other people who are in our hospital for a whole variety of other reasons, the more traditional reasons they would be there, and we have capacity to serve more. Bringing those three hospital CEOs in yesterday to speak to the Commonwealth of Mass and to participate in this event was to make sure that everybody understands. The people did a lot of work to make sure that we would have enough capacity to serve people who are dealing with COVID, but that we would also have the capacity here in the Commonwealth to take care of people who are dealing with cancer or kidney issues or stroke or an injury. That is exactly what this was about, and I really hope, and we've said this many times, if you're not feeling well, if you have an ongoing medical condition, you really need to continue to stay in touch with your clinicians, and if you need to go to the hospital, go. They've been working really hard to be in a position to make sure that they can take care of you and deal with your situation and your circumstance. And as we all know, we have terrific healthcare providers here in the Commonwealth from one end to the other. About 8% of the total number of people who test positive for COVID-19 are currently hospitalized, and that number has remained stable for many of the past few days. We continue, as we said before, to have a significant number of empty beds. There's a lot of staff capacity there, and I continue to believe that we are doing all the things we need to do here to make sure that we can not only treat people who are dealing with coronavirus and COVID-19, but also people who are dealing with other medical conditions and circumstances. With respect to PPE, we've now delivered over 5.6 million pieces. That's masks, gloves, gowns, and ventilators, which have been distributed to healthcare workers, first responders, and many others. I do want to provide an update on the Unemployment Assistance Program. Earlier this week, Massachusetts was one of the first states in the country to successfully implement the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program that was created under the Federal CARES Act. This program provides unemployment benefits for people who've lost their jobs due to COVID-19 but don't qualify for traditional unemployment because their companies aren't participating in the traditional system and therefore they don't either. They're typically people who we call and often refer to as the self-employed or gig workers or contractors or consultants. Because they don't have that traditional setup, we had to build a separate program to enroll them, to check out and clarify their valid eligibility for the program, and then based on the rules established under the Federal CARE Act, assist them financially according to that. This was a very big deal to set up, but it was a really important element in our program across the country and here in Massachusetts to support these people. Our teams at the Department of Unemployment Assurance and the Secretary of Labor and Workforce Development's office and our IT folks made tremendous progress and launched this system on Monday, which was 10 days ahead of our scheduled start date. So far, the system has processed well over 100,000 claims for this particular group of individuals, which is a big number that adds another dimension to the intensity of the crisis people face with respect to work. On the one hand, it's mind-boggling and concerning that so many people are filing for unemployment, but on the other hand, I'm glad our system has been able to keep up and actually process claims so that these folks can get the support that they need. Our platform for traditional unemployment has continued to process claims and hasn't crashed the way systems have in many other states. Hundreds of thousands of these claims have already been processed and checks have already been issued. Those checks do include the extra $600 a week that was part of another piece of the Federal CARES Act benefit, which has been implemented by our administration. I do want to thank Labor and Workforce Development Secretary Roz Acosta and her team for their incredibly hard work, and Kurt Wood at IT and his team for the work they did working side by side with Roz's team to put this platform up and to get it to work. By launching this platform successfully and ahead of schedule, we've taken another big step toward helping all the workers here in the Commonwealth who lost their jobs as a result of the decisions that were made to deal with the spread associated with COVID-19. There's much more to do, and sadly, the economic toll that's with us is going to be with us for a while. There's no question about that. Yesterday, the federal government announced that there were over 80,000 new claims on the traditional unemployment system that were filed in Massachusetts. That number of new claims is smaller than what we've seen in previous weeks, which suggests that many people who've been hit by COVID-19 have already filed initial claims in previous weeks. But no mistake, make no mistake, that's still a huge number. If you go back to sort of the months of January and February, we would typically see somewhere between 7 and 10,000 new claims in a week. To have numbers like the ones we continue to have here are unprecedented and speak in very big, loud, and significant terms about how big a deal this economic downturn is here in the Commonwealth for people who are dealing with the loss of a job. In total, over 650,000 new claims have been filed since March 15th. We've worked pretty hard through that system, and over the course of this time, we're currently paying approximately 400,000 people and obviously are working through the rest of the group that's currently in process. That 400,000 people is a really big number, four times the size of the number of people who are collecting unemployment benefits in the month of February. And obviously, we're grateful that we've been able to process those claims on behalf of those people who lost their jobs through no fault of their own. Those people are also receiving that extra $600 a week on top of their regular benefits, which was also part of the Federal CARES Act. But we know we have a lot more to do. This is an incredibly difficult time for many people, and we're working really hard to do all we can to make sure people get access to the benefits they're entitled to. We've talked before about the fact that we had 50 people working in a call center in the month of February at the Department of Unemployment Assistance. We now have almost 1,000 people working remotely, both taking calls and also calling people back. They're up to doing about 20,000 individual calls a day to people to help them work through their applications. And they continue at DUA to host daily unemployment town halls that are held in both English and Spanish and have been attended by nearly 200,000 people at this point in time. There's no doubt that the steps we've taken so far to deal with the coronavirus and to stop the spread have had significant economic dislocation for hundreds of thousands of people here in Massachusetts. We're very cognizant of that fact, and that's why so much work has gone in to making sure that we can make the unemployment system serve the people it's intended to serve. I do want to thank all of the folks on the public service side who are working on so many different fronts. Whether they work in transportation, in human services, at the Department of Unemployment Assistance, at Consumer Affairs, at Business Regulation, at DEP, in our parks. These are all the folks who are showing up every day to work on your behalf and to make sure that we continue to do the things people expect us to do here in Massachusetts during this very difficult time. I want to close with this. We're at the end of what I think everybody would say is another difficult week in managing our way through the surge. And yesterday marked 1 month since we issued our original emergency order to close non-essential businesses. I know for a lot of people it's felt like it's been a lot longer than that. And I'm sure that's true for many of the folks who've been in the middle of it from the beginning. And I know that everybody would love to see that it's over. But here we are still in this surge. And we need to recognize that this insidious and often invisible virus is still making people here in Massachusetts very sick. We need people to continue to do their part, and they need to do it not just for themselves and their families and their neighbors. They need to do it for all those essential workers I was just talking about, all those public servants and first responders, and all those people in healthcare who are working really hard to try and make sure that the people who get sick get better. For everybody involved in this, we get that there are tough times, but we also know that while there are many tough times ahead, we have people here who know how to play the game and will stick with it all the way through to the end. And I do want to say that one of the things that helps keep us going right now is the spirit and resilience and the stories that we hear every single day about what's being done by our residents here in Massachusetts to help one another. The stories are terrific. They're hard to hear because they come because of and with a response to a very difficult situation that many people find themselves in. And people are making sacrifices in many cases to help others manage their way through some wildly difficult times. But the stories can also be uplifting. And parents sharing profound examples of high schoolers, for example, who despite having their senior year cut short, are taking up jobs at their local supermarket so that they can help out in their community. I talked the other day about a woman who received gloves and masks from friends so that her spouse, who has cancer, would be able to wear those when he goes to get his cancer treatments. Businesses are stepping up to transform their manufacturing operations and help produce the medical equipment right here in Massachusetts that our first responders and healthcare workers need, often doing that at enormous cost to their own operations. And we also see little glimmers of hope all around us. And I hope that all of us will use that as part of the fuel that we all need to not only get through the surge, but get to the other side and start to think about what the next act here in Massachusetts will look like. I want to thank the people of the Commonwealth for all their continued work that they do to maintain that separation, to keep distance, to stop the spread, and frankly, to step up with all of us to make sure that we get through this surge and can start to think about and talk about what the next act will look like here in the Commonwealth. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Secretary Sutters. Where are you? There you are.
You're listening to WBUR's live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily coronavirus
Thank
briefing
you, Governor,
from
Lieutenant
the State
Governor,
House.
And welcome back, Commissioner Burrell, to the podium. Just a couple of updates from the command center. We've talked before, and I'm going to talk about a couple of waivers that we've submitted. Just to put it into context, what is a waiver? It is when we have programs that have to follow very stringent federal rules, and you have the opportunity to request a waiver from certain federal rules, particularly around the areas of like food security, eligibility programs, and the like, and insurance coverage. So we continue to scour the opportunities to ensure that Massachusetts residents have the basic necessities and insurance coverage that they need. So this week, we are submitting two additional waiver requests to the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to implement additional flexibilities for healthcare providers and residents seeking care. In particular, these waiver requests will help MassHealth deliver, which is our Medicaid program, deliver the most effective care to our members and to support healthcare providers during the COVID-19 public health emergencies. These requests are in addition to the other waiver requests that have already been submitted and approved by CMS. One of the things our federal partners have done has been very quick in the response to the state's needs around these waivers. Our requests include, we have the opportunity actually to waive some Medicare requirements, which are important around telehealth. So our requests include expanding Medicare telehealth coverage to include services provided by phone as well as video, to increase access to healthcare for seniors and individuals with disabilities who may not have readily available access to video technology. This would be consistent with the telehealth coverage MassHealth and commercial plans have in Massachusetts and that we are providing. This is very important for elders and people with disability to have safe healthcare coverage through telehealth if approved by the federal government. Additionally, we're allowing MassHealth flexibility to qualify for coverage for individuals who may be eligible but have not submitted all their forms to the state. By providing flexibility with respect to federal provider payments limits to enable MassHealth to provide critical stabilization funds for our healthcare providers, you've heard us talk about that before, in addition, being able to enroll individuals into MassHealth for a 90-day period while we ensure we have all the documents available for them so they have coverage. Details on all of our waiver requests can be found on the MassHealth website, and you can also link it through the COVID-19 website at mass.gov. And with that, it's my privilege to welcome back Commissioner Burrell.
You're listening to WBUR's live coverage of Governor Charlie
Good
Baker's
afternoon.
Daily coronavirus briefing from the
Thank
State
you,
House.
Thank you, Governor, Lieutenant Governor, and Secretary. I'm so pleased to be here today to rejoin you at this podium and appreciate the encouragement and support each of you has given me over the past month. And I'd like to say thank you to everyone for your support. I have heard from many of you in the last few weeks and have deeply appreciated it. As the number of cases and deaths for COVID-19 continue to rise during this surge period, many of us now know someone who has had COVID-19, and all of our lives have been impacted by this brutal virus. I want to acknowledge the suffering and loss of life that COVID-19 is causing. For those who have lost someone, I want to share my condolences. If someone you know is sick, I share my hope for a speedy recovery. Having been infected with COVID-19 and thankfully recovered, I know firsthand the impact of this virus. For most of us, we have never been confronted with a virus that is as infectious or had this degree of impact on our daily lives. I was diagnosed with COVID-19 at the end of March. Today marks 4 weeks since I tested positive. I got tested when my husband called me at work to say my daughter had a fever. I had noticed some muscle aches and fatigue that day, but had related that to long hours of work and not enough sleep. The first week, I had severe muscle aches and fever, and Tylenol helped me be able to get work done at home. By the second week, my fever had gone away, but it was replaced by this intense feeling of exhaustion. I could tell the virus had taken its toll on me. It was only in the third week that I felt my strength slowly returning. I had spent the last few months reading everything I could about COVID-19, talking with our internal Department of Public Health experts across Massachusetts and the country. But it was one thing to intellectually understand this evolving disease and an entirely different thing to personally experience it. My husband and I and our children all got sick around the same time. My husband is also an essential worker in healthcare, so we had both been working. My kids were home practicing social distancing. Once we were diagnosed, we were all isolated at home. I returned to work last week when I was cleared by my local Board of Health. Fortunately, I did not need to be hospitalized. I have thankfully recovered. People can and do recover, and we need to remember that. I was able to work from home every day on phone calls and returning emails throughout my illness, and I am deeply grateful to the staff at the Department of Public Health who all made this possible. I'm inspired by their unwavering dedication to tirelessly address this pandemic 24/7 since the beginning of February. I've learned so much from my illness. I saw firsthand the importance of testing, contact tracing, and appropriate quarantine and isolation. These are all components of our comprehensive state plan to address this pandemic. Enhancing our testing capacity, strengthening our contact tracing capacities, increasing our healthcare system capacities, and social distancing. It has emboldened me to continue to do this work, and I have deep appreciation for being a member of this team. As a reminder, if you feel sick, call your medical provider. If your symptoms are severe, seek medical attention. Of course, it's crucial that all of us continue to practice physical distancing, hand hygiene, staying home if we're sick, working remotely whenever possible, and limiting our footprint in our communities. Also, it's tremendously important to get information from trusted sources. Do not try any treatment without speaking to your healthcare provider. We may be hearing about all kinds of treatments that are unproven, and some may be dangerous. Please go to trusted sources like mass.gov/COVID-19 or the CDC for information. We've all learned many lessons from this virus, including the importance of public health and the importance of community spirit and looking out for one another. I'm so proud to be a resident of Massachusetts and so deeply inspired by the acts of sacrifice and kindness you are all making every day. And as hard as this is, I know we will get through this together. Thank you.
Questions?
Governor, do you have any plans to extend the May 4th advisory? The mayor is saying he expects that will be extended.
So, first of all, we have said, I think for most of this week, that we plan to follow the guidance that's been issued by not just folks in D.C., but also by folks in other countries and by many experts in the public health community that until you have a significant number of days, and it varies depending upon who you talk to, where you see either a reduction in hospitalizations or a reduction in positive tests or some other set of criteria that shows that you are in fact past the surge, it doesn't make sense to reopen. And because I can't, you know, crystal ball exactly when we think that's going to be, what I would say is that our view going forward here is going to be that until we start to see some of that kind of information, the peaking of the surge and the move in the other direction for some sustained period of time, we're not going to be interested in reopening anything.
Why not? If I could just follow up, why not extend it now then at this point if we're still in the surge?
Because we're still following the day-to-day data to see if there are any patterns or any trends in it. It doesn't make... I get the fact that people want a hard and fast answer on this one. And I keep saying that the hard and fast answer is going to be in the trend data. And I can't predict what the trend data is going to say over the course of the next 5, 6, or 7 days. Nobody can, because nobody's really dealt with anything quite like this before. I mean, we did some modeling that said we thought we would end up in the surge somewhere around the 10th to the 20th of April. That turned out to be reasonably accurate. But as I've also said here, because of all the work people did distancing and because of all the work people did slowing down the spread, we ended up with a much slower ride up than I think we expected to have. And we are currently sort of sitting in what I would call the peak, but we haven't seen anything in the daily data that would suggest that we're over the peak and heading down the other side. And until we see that, we're not going to make any commitments to reopen. We'll certainly talk about it, and we've already started discussing that with a variety of folks in the public health and in the business community. And there are plenty of people out there who started to sort of bring to us information that they have based on how either other employers or other parts of their business has dealt with this issue in countries and other parts of the world that are farther down the road than we are, to just sort of provide us with some sort of light guidance on what other people are doing. But I've said many times that I think hypothesizing on where this particular virus is going to be 5 days, 10 days, 20 days from now is just not smart policy, because it's unpredictable and it's unprecedented. And the best thing you can do is let the facts, as they become available, drive decisions.
Is there enough time between now and May 4th to get that 2 weeks' worth of data, or are we running out of room and that it's going to have to be beyond May 4th?
I think what I would say there is that we're going to continue to follow the data. And we'll have more to say about it when we get a little closer. I get the fact that people would like an answer. But any answer I give you today wouldn't be worth very much, because it's going to be driven by what happens over the course of the next 2 weeks, which I don't have a crystal ball, I can't predict.
Governor, what do you say to people who are still having trouble?
This is WBUR, and you're listening to live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily coronavirus briefing from the State House.
I'm not worried about the request we put in on the unemployment insurance side, and the reason for that is there's plenty of precedence that shows that in the economic downturn in 2009 and 10 and in the economic downturn after 9/11 in 2001 and 2, this is a fairly standard operating procedure where the federal government will make funds available to states that they can borrow against on their unemployment benefit and then pay back once things start to get better. I'm not worried about that at all. With respect to the to unemployment generally, what I would say is that we went into this knowing that we were going to have to dramatically expand our ability to support people who were going to be filing, because we would never have seen numbers like this ever. And that's why our call center has 20 times as many people in it today as it did 4 weeks ago, And it's why we put so many people on the process of standing up a program that could make unemployment benefits available for a community that have never been in the system before, the so-called self-employed and gig workers. And we've been working, and they've been working 7 days a week since the start of this to get people processed and to get them their benefits as quickly as they can. And I absolutely believe that we will catch up. And I would also say that if we have, I mean, I don't want to do the hard math here, but the bottom line is if we have as many people as we have collecting on both those programs at this point, we're starting to get to the point where I wouldn't call it caught up, but if we just got 80,000 new claims, we'll be able to move those a lot faster than we were able to move the ones we were getting back at the beginning of the month when we were first setting all this up.
Governor, could I ask you how it feels to have Commissioner Burrell back up there with you, healthy and ready to work?
Well, first of all, that was a scary time, I think, for her and for her husband and for her family and for her friends and her colleagues. But it was also a little bit of a wake-up call for all of us that this is not something that anybody is immune from. And I think I said at one of the press conferences after the commissioner said that she had tested positive, people said, well, what about you guys? Are you gonna get tested? And I said that, you know, the commissioner was a really committed social distancer. And even under that scenario, it found a way, the virus found a way to get to her. And I think in many ways, that's a story that plays out thousands and thousands and thousands of times all over the country and all over the world. And that's part of the reason why the tracing program is ultimately going to be hugely important. But that said, I'm really glad she's better. I mean, more than anything else, we're glad to have you back.
Could I ask Mr. Burrell a question?
Yeah, yeah.
A quick follow-up for you, Monica.
Sure.
You know, the governor calls this insidious a lot, and I think he's right, because do you ever ask yourself, how could I have these intense body aches and be up all night? Other people walk around spreading the virus and feel fine, and they can be 80 years old and have that happen. I don't get it, do you?
You know, it shows the nature of the disease. There's a wide spectrum, and some people are asymptomatic. They have no symptoms at all. Some people, as we've seen, unfortunately, on the other end, end up having a breathing tube in the ICU, and then there's everything in between. So my story is one of those stories, but there are multiple ones, and there's multiple ways this virus presents itself. It really goes to show the importance that all of us are vulnerable to potentially get this infection, to pass it on to others. Even if you don't have underlying conditions that put you at risk, like myself, you can get this virus, and that's why this is such a community effort to stay safe together.
Is it the strength of the immune system that determines how well we fight this and not have symptoms?
You know, that's partly responsible when it relates to some of the underlying conditions, although, again, there's a lot of variability, and as you've read, there are younger people and people without those conditions who get sick as well. We don't know enough about it yet, but I will say is that there are studies going on, and I plan to volunteer for some of them that are happening here in Massachusetts, and I encourage other individuals who have recovered to do that as well so we can learn more about this virus.
Governor, Siemens is saying today that they can produce 25 million antibody tests a month out of their facility, Walpole. Are you aware of this? And would Massachusetts have a leg up on this since we're so close? How could we benefit from that?
I knew Siemens was... is that FDA approved at this point?
I'm not sure.
I think they have an application pending. I'm not sure it's been approved. The big issue with antibody testing generally is there are antibody tests that are being used right now in the U.S. that haven't been approved by the FDA. There are other ones that are being used that have been approved by the FDA but aren't the preferred ones. And I think, you know, we were actually talking about this upstairs. Our hope is that what eventually happens here is the funnel gets a lot tighter and there's ultimately, and I hope it gets tighter faster. One of the reasons we've talked a lot about why we think it's important for the feds to invest in the CDC and the FDA, and I'm glad that finally in this fourth package there's money for them. It's because they have a huge role to play on testing and on treatments and ultimately on vaccines. And one of the big roles on testing is to take this antibody stuff, which really is all over the place, is probably too broad a term, but there's a lot of variability in the antibody tests that are out there now, and shrink this thing down to the point where they say, here are two or three that we really believe will give you the positive negatives, the positive tests and the negative tests at, you know, a 95% plus accuracy rate, and then let's run with those. But I'm certainly aware that they're working on one. And by the way, there's a lot of companies in Massachusetts that are working on testing. There are a lot of companies here that are working on treatment, and there are companies here that are working on vaccines. And there are hospitals all over Massachusetts that are involved in clinical trials on treatments right now. And I think that does mean that ultimately we have some hometown players who are going to have a lot to say about how we battle this thing through the next act. And we're in pretty reasonable contact with them a lot of the time. The one thing I would say about antibody testing is that's kind of an after-the-fact thing, and it matters. But to get back to the commissioner's point, we're going to have to do some research to figure out how long that immunity lasts and how well you can define that immunity with respect to what the benefit of those antibodies will be. Because Jonathan's question about why is it that some people get very sick and some people don't get sick at all, well, that could also have something to say with whether the antibodies that you have that show up in that test say the right thing about whether you have built an immunity, how long your immunity is going to last, and what that means with respect to how we should think about that, which is why the other side of the testing piece is still going to be really important. And again, there are plenty of companies in Massachusetts that are working on that side of the aisle as well.
Governor, could you speak to any industries you may have identified at this point that could be among the first to resume operations with strict social distancing rules in place?
There are a lot of organizations who have sort of done some of the stuff like what Jonathan talked about the other day with the barbershops and the salons, which have sort of pitched us on, what if we did this? And obviously, as we go through the process of working a reopening effort through a task force, we'll be looking at all that stuff that comes in from a whole variety of companies. But remember, there's a prerequisite for this that's called good news for some period of time before we can really start to entertain that in a serious way.
Governor, we were talking about testing and going into problem areas. Are you trying to do every nursing home in the state do a baseline for everyone, or is that even possible? Yeah.
Go ahead.
So as you know, we changed the guidance, I want to say, about 10 days ago, and it was sobering when the governor said it was 30 days ago that he signed the executive order around essential services, because it really does feel many times like one long day. So when I say about 10 days ago, so when we're contacted by a nursing home, a nursing home would say they would want X number of residents tested because they were symptomatic, and our guidance is very clear now. When we're contacted by the nursing home, we say yes, but we want to test everybody so that we have a baseline. Asymptomatic residents, symptomatic residents, and all the staff. And that is actually our preference. But obviously, that is a nursing home can say, no, we only want our symptomatic patients, residents tested. So it would be our goal, and we're over like 200 nursing homes now that we've tested, and there's 386 nursing homes in Massachusetts, and we're well over 200 now in terms of our testing them. And we know how vulnerable they are, so I do want to test all nursing homes in Massachusetts.
Okay, and the 200, is that you've done the whole facility?
So it's variable. It's variable. Early on, as I said, it was only symptomatic patients. We have gone back and said we want to come and test everybody. We've doubled the capacity of the MANG program, which is the National Guard testing program. And over the past several days, the MANG was averaging about, which is the National Guard. Massachusetts National Guard is MANG.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there you go. I know. It was one of the the acronyms. I was like, so what does MANG stand for? So Massachusetts National Guard. So the MANG program was testing probably about between 700 and 900 tests a day, and they're now 1,700, 1,800 a day. So that was the pivot we made when I temporarily halted the sending kits out to folks.
Governor, in New York, Governor Cuomo is planning an investigation of all the nursing homes to find out what is going on there. Should we be doing something like that here?
I certainly think that, and I've said this before, that we'll be doing a lot of sort of hindsight work once we get through the crisis. But in the short term, our goal is to do what we need to do on the ground every day to help enhance and improve the quality of our performance collectively in terms of taking care of folks who are residents of nursing homes, rest homes, and assisted living facilities. The work associated with that will certainly happen, but I think from our point of view, goal number one has to be to do everything we possibly can to create a safe environment for people.
Could I just ask Secretary Sutters a quick question about soldier homes? I was wondering if you could explain whether there's been any capacity to do a next round of testing, or I know there's been daily reports saying X number of residents or employees have been tested. Do those include any people who've been retested, and is that something that's being looked at down the road as a possibility, if not already?
So will you try the end of that question again, Tim,
yes,
for me?
Sorry. For those, for the Chelsea and Holyoke soldier homes, have any of the residents and employees been retested? And if not, is that something we have the capacity to do in the future, or how would that be explored?
So at both the Chelsea and Holyoke soldiers home, we have tested all residents and the vast majority of staff. And when I say the vast majority of staff, the staff that we have not tested are staff who've not come back to work, either by calling who are out sick or on extended leave and the like. So we've done a baseline of all the staff. We have not done a retesting of staff. Obviously, any new staff who come in, we test, and obviously the consultants that we've brought in to stabilize the Holyoke Soldiers Home have all been tested. So we have not retested individuals. We're spending a lot of time in at Holyoke Soldiers Home in particular around cohorting patients, moving sick patients. Very acutely ill sick patients have gone to the Holyoke Medical Center, and really trying to bring in infection control, a occupational nurse to really work with the staff to stabilize and to hire people back.
Thank you.
This is WBUR, and you've been listening to live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily coronavirus briefing at the State House. I'm Tiziana Deering, and also listening has been WBUR's Carrie Goldberg. Carrie, hey there.
Hey there, Tiziana.
So, Carrie, some days we get big announcements from the governor. Other days are truly update days. Today felt like more of an update.
It did, and it felt like he was kind of sketching out the big picture of where we're at, which is that we're still in the surge. We might be kind of at the top of the surge, but we're not heading down the other side yet. And so much as people keep pressing him to say, when are we going to reopen? What are we going to do next? He's kind of holding fast and saying, until we get data that shows very clearly that our numbers are on the way down, we're not going to be doing anything different.
One of the things I noticed from that is obviously the current reopening date based on the last announcement is May 4th. And the governor kept saying, I'm not going to change that until we have more information. But he kept talking about watching data for the next couple of weeks, which, of course, would take us past May 4th. So part of my takeaway from today is we don't know when we're going to reopen yet, but it doesn't sound like the governor thinks it's likely that it will be May 4th.
It does sound that way because some experts do say, you know, you want at least a couple of weeks of a very clear trend of going downward before you start thinking about reopening. So if you and I were betting, I would not bet against you that it's going to go later than May 4th.
You know, one of the most dramatic things today, Carrie, I think, was actually seeing DPH Commissioner Monica Burrell back at the podium and hearing her describe her own bout of COVID-19 and how hard it hit her.
Yes. And she's, of course, using her own case to push the message that the Department of Public Health has been trying to spread all along, which is the importance of social distancing, the importance of testing, the importance of isolation. But she has certainly felt it very much on her own skin. And I think also what's nice is that she represents recovery now. Like, she was a less severe case. And we don't have exact numbers on how many people in Massachusetts have recovered from COVID-19, but it has to have been most of them. And so it's nice to be able to focus for once on recovery rather than the really difficult cases.
It is nice, Carrie, at the same time listening to her describe her symptoms, even though it clearly was one of the less severe cases, it still sounded pretty nasty, didn't it?
You know, it sounded nasty, but it sounded to me a lot like a bad case of flu. And of course, in many, many cases, this is much worse than flu. So I don't know. I would imagine that she was kind of middling in terms of the case that she got. You definitely wouldn't want it, but it did sound somewhat, in terms of symptoms, comparable to flu.
Carrie, one of the other things that the governor talked quite a bit about was unemployment today. Rates of filing, how prepared the state has been for the new category of unemployment, which is gig workers. Do you want to talk a little bit about what we heard today?
Yes. Well, he said that, you know, it had been a very big deal to be able to set up the program that got active this week to help these gig workers. This is not the traditional type of unemployment assistance. And he says that the state has already processed over 100,000 claims for this group, which is a lot, although it's not nearly as much as the state overall has processed more than 650,000 new claims since March 15th. So the numbers are huge. He's acknowledging it. He's saying these are very, very difficult economic times, but at least it looks like the claims are not still growing as rapidly. The latest week was a little bit smaller than previous weeks have been, so maybe that has at least somewhat peaked, we can hope.
Yeah, Carrie, I've been following the governor's press conferences for several weeks now, and it was striking to hear him talk about 80,000 new claims on the traditional side of unemployment. And while he acknowledged that was a huge number, he was talking about it as a smaller, more manageable number. And given that, you know, in January, the typical filings would be 7,000 to 10,000 people, and 80,000 now feels like a small number, really does kind of put things in context.
It does. It really reminds you that everything is relative and that we're in just this whole different ball game. One of the things he said that struck me most was that yesterday marked 1 month since he issued that first shutdown order, the essential services order. And Health and Human Services Secretary Mary Lou Sutter said it seemed to her like one long day since then. It is just amazing that it's only been a month. It feels a lot longer to be in this different period.
And Carrie, in our last minute or so, I'm mindful that healthcare reporting is your specialty, and there was some Q&A with the governor about antibody testing today. And I wondered if there was anything in that discussion that really struck you or that you would want to explain.
Well, it was just that he sounded very cautious. We got an announcement from Siemens today that their plant in Walpole could turn out 25 million antibody tests a month, which sounds very impressive. And of course, the antibody test tells you whether you've had the virus and whether you may be immune. So that's interesting. But he was very cautious. He was saying the antibody tests are kind of all over the map. We need the FDA to let us know which ones are really good. So this is very much a developing topic, but still it's encouraging that it seems like we could ramp up these antibody tests quite a bit.
And so, Carrie, just one brief question, last question. At the very beginning, the governor talked about where we are on hospital capacity, testing, et cetera. It sounds like he really is trying to manage people's expectations. Was there a headline out of that that struck you, or was it just, hey, we're where we've been?
I think I would point out that he said we are way up in terms of how much we're testing, and our hospital capacity is still okay. We're getting more positive tests, but that doesn't mean there's way more people in the hospital. So basically, we're doing okay on hospitals, and we're testing a lot more.
All right, and that's WBUR's Carrie Goldberg. Carrie, I appreciate you listening along and providing us some analysis. We're going to talk to you again on Radio Boston in just a minute.
Okay, see you soon.
I'm Tiziana Deering. That's been live coverage of the Daily Coronavirus Briefing. Do tune in again at 3 o'clock, and we'll be happy to greet you on Radio Boston. This is WBUR.